Mike Miner and Betsy Norrie live in a 104-year-old, three-story Victorian house in Chicago's East Ravenswood neighborhood. Mike is the media columnist for the Chicago Reader. His wife, Betsy, owns Presence, a local chain of three women's clothing stores. I met with them in their living room. This house, their home for the past 23 years, has been a place of both solace and tumult.
We have a vast emotional stake in this house, and a lot of it turns on May 26, 1982. I was at work downtown at the Reader. Betsy was in New York on a buying trip for her store when I got a call from a neighbor to say she saw smoke coming out of our house and that she'd called 911. So I hopped in my car and came home. And as I got here, there were neighbors out gathered around in the street. A fireman was up on the roof of the front porch here, which you have access to from a bedroom upstairs. And he was holding my young daughter, Joanna, who was about 10 months old then, in his arms and bringing her down a ladder. She was covered with soot and looked dead to me. When he got to the ground, I asked him, "Is she dead?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Well, what about the babysitter?" He, or a policeman, said, "She is dead. She was murdered." What had happened was that somebody had broken into the house, apparently entering by probably putting a foot through the basement door. Our daughter was asleep in her crib, which is in this bedroom, off the porch. I'm not sure what our babysitter was doing, but he accosted her, hit her over the head with something, took her into the bathtub and then drowned her. Then went back downstairs and set a fire in the basement, and that's where the smoke was. It wasn't much of a fire, but it did fill the house with smoke. It wasn't so much whether we wondered we could move back in. We were relieved to be able to move back in and stop living off with the assistance of our friends. But after we got back in, we wondered, you know, what are the kids going to think about being here? We didn't even get a new bathtub. I think back on that, I have no idea why we wouldn't. You'd think that at the very least. There are elements of our conduct here that I scratch my head about, and I'm not sure I can explain them or defend them. It might have been like beginning to unravel a sweater, that if you deal with the bathtub, then you ask yourself, well, is that enough? What else should we change? Maybe it's not the bathtub, maybe it's the whole house. So we didn't really do anything and told ourselves that it was a fluke event. The lightning doesn't strike twice, that it was a fine house, and we would go on.
My friends just thought I was crazy not to move. One friend priced a bathtub for me, but I just kind of couldn't. Michael sees it from a position of strength. I see it as from a position of weakness. I was just sort of immobilized by this. Immobilized and kind of stubborn. Like nothing can make me do anything until I'm ready to do it. I take baths a lot. We don't have a shower in that bathroom. And I think of Nina every time I take a bath. And it isn't with horror, the horror of what happened. I think of her, of what a nice person she was, and she had worked for us since the oldest child was a baby, so we had known her for about 3.5 years. But I think of her.
I feel strangely derelict that we didn't do more, that maybe we should have moved. I don't know I don't know what sort of...
Like, I think, why didn't we move?
And I'm thinking of in terms of our children growing up, and what did our daughter Joanna think about this house and about this bathtub when she got old enough to understand what had happened to her? But it's nothing we can sit here and tell you we're certain about now. We might have done the wrong thing. We easily could have. And a couple of years later, we almost did move out. We saw a place we liked out west of here, and we're within an inch of making a bid for it. And thought about it again the next morning and decided not to. And that was probably a watershed event in our decision to stay here ultimately. It wasn't something I wanted to stop thinking about and put out of my mind and out of my life. I wanted to proceed step by step through the experience of being traumatized and then learning to live with the trauma of sort of, in a sense, being humiliated by being the lord of a house that had been assaulted and breached, and then deal with that and go on with things. Just clearing out seemed like an easy way out, and an inappropriate way out. I'm a writer, and in a sense, this was very stimulating. I did a lot of writing about then, and in a sense, this house became my seed corn. I had an emotional investment in it that I didn't want to surrender. I didn't really want to start over, because starting over doesn't interest me. I don't think you start over in life. I think you accrue. And what I accrued, I valued. And maybe that's one reason why I stayed here. You know, you don't want to give that up any more than you want to give up any major chapter in your life. You don't really want to forget and put behind. It's too much a part of you. This house at this point is almost like a person to me. And we talk from time to time of selling it because our kids are disappearing.
Next year, the last one goes to college. We're going to be rattling around in here in a 10, 12-room house.
I don't know quite what we'll do. It's going to seem very strange to me.
You know, when we sell this house, which we inevitably will, I have a fantasy that we will sit down with the new owners and tell them what happened here.
It's part of the history of the house. I can't imagine that we wouldn't if they show the slightest curiosity in knowing, you know.
After they've already bought it, however.
And we'll tell them about, I don't know. I don't think that'll stop anybody from buying. But I'm not eager to leave at all. I'm not eager to sell it. I love this place.